How do you spell a book? I'll teach you right now. B as in, book. And O as in OBGYN. And K as in OK. But I won't read that book about an OBGYN anytime soon.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Not Your Normal Books. My name is Kalen. How are you guys doing today? I am doing pretty well. I hope you guys had a good and safe Halloween. I totally spaced that it was last week, truthfully. I will say that this week was a bit of a difficult week for me. The anniversary of both my grandma's deaths were both this week, so it was a rough one. Because it doesn't matter how much you prepare yourself for it still hits you. My grandmas have both been gone for 6 and 4 years. Still sucks no matter what. And then my mom's parents, their anniversary was just, 7 days, like a week before, a week after she passed would have been their 55th wedding anniversary. And, you know, that one was hard. Because that one we didn't know was coming. Yeah. So, did you guys know that they make pumpkin spice chocolate? Yeah, I found that out the other day when I bought some and I melted it down, made it into suckers, and I had to do that with a couple more. But there, I also found out that you can do this. That you can make chocolate jello. I'm going to try that recipe at some point this weekend. Do I think it'll go good? I don't know. Am I a little terrified of it? Yes. And my wrist just popped really loud. I don't know if you guys could hear that, but it felt weird and good at the same time. We're going to get into our book. For some reason, there's a lot to go over in this book because a lot of things happen. So I've got like twice as many pages of notes than I do for usually any other book that I do. So we're not going to power through it, but we're going to get through it. So the book that we have this week is Tightrope by Crystal Ash. Our characters in this, I never did look up how to pronounce one of the names correctly. I'm going to do that right now. I told myself to do it earlier. I never did because apparently part of it didn't help that I didn't have internet this morning. We had such high winds where they were between 30 and 50 miles an hour in the morning, and it dwindled down to mid 20 mile per hour in the afternoon. So the wind took out our internet provider. So it took until I think it was a little bit before I had to go to work before we got the internet back. So I was planning on recording earlier today, but that didn't happen because no internet. So our characters are Melody, Razvan, Connor, Arjun, Hunter, Rena, Rue, Gabe, Colt, and Miriam. So where we left off last week was Hunter and all them hear howling in the distance. He realizes that it's his brothers that are doing this. So him and the kids run out and they are just there with them. So that's where we're starting at. Melody and the other guys, they're starting to feel like Hunter and the kids are leaving them now that some of their pack mates are back. And to take Mel's mind off this, RJ is teaching her more about her shaman abilities and seeing the type or seeing which one she has. Hunter is very excited to have his family that, but is kind of wondering, you know, are they going to make me choose between being with them and being with Mel and the guys? Sorry. His brothers, Colt and Gabe, got separated from him and the kids when their pack was attacked. He tells them about Mel and how she's a shaman and a human, and you can see just the pure disgust on Gabe's face when he hears the word human. Colt actually tells them that they have recently met a shaman themselves, and we find out that both Colt and Gabe are involved with her. But, you know, thinking about it, it doesn't make sense that Gabe would be involved with her with his such hatred for humans. And it's very understandable with like his hatred for him because the reason that their pack got separated and dispersed because of human hunters. And we find out that the shaman's name is Miriam. And throughout the book, you can tell that Gabe really does like her and has feelings for her, but is really just holding something back. Melody can't sleep because she's trying to hear if Hunter and the kids come back home. And it's around 1 in the morning. They still aren't back. She's still not asleep. And like it hurts because she's thinking at this point, he chose the pack over us. And in a way, you understand it. It was his family first. But then you kind of wonder, was Hunter just using them as like a type of like placeholder until, you know, the until he could meet up with the rest of his pack whenever that is. And that could be a possibility. Raz wakes up and sees that she's awake. And so they talk about the relationship that's starting between him and Hunter. And Raz assures her that if Hunter leaves, that he won't leave her because if he has to decide between the two of them, he's always going to choose Melody. It's morning and you can hear someone in the kitchen. And so they get up, they go to see who it is, and it's Hunter, the kids, and his brothers. When Hunter introduces them, they come off as standoffish and a little rude. So Connor's the one that lays down the law for this. And I think it takes everyone back that it is the non-shifter of the group that is putting out these very big alpha vibes. Now, what Connor says is that if they're rude in any way after this moment, if they are disrespectful in any way, they're gone. He doesn't give a shit if they're Hunter's brothers or not. They're fucking gone. And, you know, Colt is impressed by this and he kind of laughs and he goes and he starts a conversation. Gabe is someone who barely says anything. I think he just does a like a head nod or something, just very something basic, or maybe he just ignores them and just hangs out with the kids. And you know, it really grates on I think still mostly Connor and maybe a little bit of Raz. They talk a little about her being a shaman and the shaman that they know, and Melody is tells them that she would like to meet their shaman at some point. Connor finally has his doctor's appointment, and this is the appointment of where he's going to get prosthetics. Now, these won't be his final ones, these are just prototypes, just so then they can get like make sure everything's fine. They have to do little tweaks on them and whatnot. And I had to look up quite a bit of how this works, and it's very fascinating, but I'm not that great at engineering, science, not my forte whatsoever. So a lot of the information was a little bit too, it went over my head a lot. We'll go with that. But this is technology that even Connor's never seen before. So Connor's legs without anything on, where he calls them his stubs, where his stubs are, they are on different lengths. I believe one is just below the knee and the other one's like mid calf, maybe above the knee. I can't really remember. But they made, so even though the prosthetics are different lengths, they both have the same weight. And this is for a more even, so then he can have even strides. And they talk about, they tell him that, hey, there are also sensors in these. And they explain that these sensors detect when a certain muscle flexes and can make, and so it makes the ankle and toe joints move like a actual foot and ankle. So everything would move in a more natural way. And this actually makes Connor just a little bit taller. And so he is doing all of these different range of motion, standing on one leg, standing on the other, walking around. And he and Melody can see that he wants to like overexert himself really, because he's so excited. He's never felt this good in prosthetics since a little bit after he first got him, I think. And a lot of the reason that they're doing a lot of like having him do like all these like range of motion and everything else is to see if anything needs to be tweaked, like if anything's pinching him, just to make it more comfortable for him. And they tell him yet again that these are just prototypes. and not the actual ones that he will get. And the ones that he will get will last him a couple of years before he has to get a new pair. When after the appointment, they get a phone call, and this is from Angela. Now, if you remember, in the last book, they went and they auditioned. It was her and Raz. They went and they maybe Arjun went with them too. I can't remember. Nope, just Raz on that one. They went and did an audition, but they weren't chosen. But hold on, time out, spoiling everything. She gets a phone call from Angela from the audition, and she learns that the local theater decided to go with a different act, but they have another offer for her, and that is at their new location in Miami, Florida. And so she's just like, oh, it's a little like they're in Georgia, so it's not too far away. But she's not sure about this until they hear the price. So there's a flat rate fee of $30,000. So no matter what, they're getting paid 30 grand. And they're getting paid for that. And also, as long as there is no negative feedback, they're also getting 10% of the ticket sales for the event. Now, I don't know how much, let's say it's a bigger theater. I'm going to do some math on a calculator because, again, math is not a strong subject for me. Okay. So let's say this theater can hold 500. Yeah, we'll start off small and say, oh no, my auditorium could hold more than 500. Okay, we'll put it at 800. We'll put this theater at 800 seats, right? And let's say tickets for this go for an average ticket for this. We're going to go on the cheap end and say 150. That's probably more. Then we're going to divide that by 10. So that will give them an extra at least $12,000 on top of the 30. So they're coming, so they'll possibly be making 42,000 more or less, give or take. That is just some very rough math. So I don't, it doesn't say how many seats this holds, but I mean, shit, that's a shit ton of money for one night of work that basically you're only gonna, what, that's only, fuck, maybe even 15 minutes worth of work, like over 30 grand. Oh God, it takes me like 8 months to make that much. Fuck, I'm in the wrong business. And they're told that this is only for one night, and that there's also a possibility that this could be a reoccurring job. They're just like, we need some time to think about this. Can you give us some time? When do you need us to call you back? She goes, I need you to call me back by end of day tomorrow. If not, if I don't hear back from you, I'm going to someone else. And they're just like, okay, we'll get back to you as soon as we can. So they go home and they talk to the other guys about this, and they all realize this is too good of an offer to pass up. And when they do talk about this, they don't see Hunter, but they do see Raz and RJ. Now, Raz is right on board with this, but RJ is very RJ's argument is this. So you're going to go and you're going to do this. And it's basically the same argument he did with the last time that her and Raz went for the audition. And it's just like, so you're basically going to take, I can't remember exactly how this argument went, but anyway, RJ, after the argument, he thinks about it, and then he agrees to go with him. She does ask where Hunter is, and they're just like, who knows, as soon as you left, all the wolves left too. She calls Angela back, and they accept the job, and they talk about accommodations at the hotel because they think that they have to pay for it. But Angela is just like, we are investing in you, so we'll be taking care of the cost of the hotel. So they order dinner. They start working on choreography for their act because they have what they're planning on doing. They have to get down pat. Like, there can be no mishaps with this because, as you know, Raz is going to work with fire and very sharp blades. So anything could go wrong and be disastrous. And they're also making their act with all four of them in it. So you've got Melody, the ring mistress, Raz, the sword swallower and fire breather, Connor, the acrobat, Arjun, the tiger. So trying to find something to do that incorporates all of them to where there is no risk of danger is so hard. So they're working on this, and it's just before midnight when they call it a day. They go to bed, and Hunter is still not back. And this fucking really pisses everyone off. She wakes up at some point and it's near morning and she hears something and she goes downstairs. She sees Hunter. They have this conversation. She finds out that he went with his brothers to go see Miriam, the other shaman, and he didn't know that they were going to be gone all day. And he goes, well, I wanted to go there to find out about your abilities. And she goes, RJ's been doing that with me. If you were here, you would have known that. If you even talked to us about it, you would have known that. And it's not to throw it in his face at all, but it's just like, we haven't seen you in days. If we do, you're here and gone within 10 minutes. And what she learns that she's has more abilities than what Miriam has. Then she goes to tell him about the job that they're gonna have in Florida, and she goes, "Will you please come with us? You don't have to perform. I just want you with us there." And he tells her that he should probably stay here because he'd rather not drag the kids along, and they want to spend time with their uncles, and they want to be. And he wants to be close to all of them. And this hurts Melody, but she understands it. And she goes, there is a possibility that we would have to move to Florida. And she goes, would you come with us? And he stays quiet for the longest time. He doesn't say anything. And, you know, this is, fuck, this has gotta hurt. And he tells her, as much as he would love to follow his heart, he can't. He has to think of what's best for Rena and Rue. And right now he doesn't know what it is, but it's not constantly moving them. In the morning, Raz comes down and he sees Melody and Hunter, but Hunter starts to wake up and Raz is just pissed at him because now that Hunter's family is here, it seems to him that Hunter's only using them until his family came, as I said before. And even tells him that he's just like, you'd rather raise your kids with someone who hates human than with someone that can understand the entire world. Okay, how I wrote that second part doesn't make sense, but basically he's saying you would rather raise your kids with Gabe right there spewing his I hate human speech a lot, other than with him, Melody, Connor, Arjun, who understand the human and shifter world and can give them the best of both instead of just one view of it. And during this argument, they see this figure out of the corner of their eye, and it turns out to be Gabe. And what Hunter does is he just goes on and just makes out with Raz aggressively. And afterwards, he looks at Gabe and goes, or no, Gabe looks at him and goes, anything you want to tell me? Hunter's just like, nope, we're good. You saw what I wanted you to see. You know that I'm in love with this shifter and I'm in love with this human. So figure it out. Or do what you want to do, like that sort of thing. It's finally getting closer to when they need to leave for Florida, and this is when Colt brings Miriam to visit, and we find out that Miriam is Arjun's stepfather's apprentice, and this is someone that he thought was actually sleeping with his stepfather after his mother had died. And the truth was never like that at all, between Miriam and RJ's stepfather. Now, RJ was just in a very bad place. He was I think he said he was like around 12 to 15 years old. So at that point, you're a teenager, you're still going through puberty, life is hard. And I will say this with experiences of being a teenager, you think the world is against you. You hate the world because you feel the world hates you. That was me as a teen. I fucking kid you not. I thought as like a kid, and I thought this until I was around 16. From at least 12 to 16, I'm just like, the world hates me, the world's against me, and all this other shit. And then once I got like 16 and old, 16 to at least 22, I'm just like, fuck, world's my goddamn oyster. I can do whatever the fuck I want. And then after 22, I'm just like, the world hates me again. And before puberty, everything is just fantastic for the most part. Like, you don't have any responsibilities. You're too young to do all the big chores. And then life kicks you in the ass. Oh, shit, glasses. So Miriam goes on to tell Melody that no two shamans are the same. They're just like fingerprints, how they can look so they can look the same, but they're not. Or snowflakes. Though then you start to wonder, with how much it snows, if there's any snowflakes on like different sides of like the country that will look the same or not. I don't know. Like, could we have snowflakes now that look the same as they did in the Ice Age? I mean, they do say history does repeat itself at times. Is history repeating itself with snow? I don't know why I'm so excited about this. It's November and it was 75 today with winds that I thought were going to take down my house. So maybe I need to stop with the sugar. Now, they all have common threads and they're able to do things just a little bit different. Now, there are a couple different, and here's what I mean. So, sight and sense are fairly common among shaman to have, whereas semblance and speak are actually on the rarer side of it. And so basically they can all have close to the they can all basically have the same type of ability, but how they use it and how and everything else is different to each and every shaman. I'm going to take this as an example. And this is the closest thing that I can think to it to describe it. Okay. All of us know how to write. And we're all taught how to write basically the same way. And we're going to go not with cursive, but with just printing it out. Now, we're all taught how to hold a pencil or pen almost in a very similar fashion. But when we write something down, our handwritings, even though we're all taught the same way, are extremely different from one another. And some of the letters can look similar to how other people write out the letters. And unless you're very good at forging, which I am not, which surprises me of how much shit I got away with forging my parents' signatures on bad grades that I didn't want them to see. How I got away with that in school, I don't understand. I'm pretty sure one of my teachers, no, my parents didn't sign it because I wrote DH because my mom's name is Deb. And it looked exactly like the DH I wrote in like fifth grade. Oh, shit. Oh. Fun times. But yeah, and I that's the closest analogy I can think to it of how everyone basically knows how to write, and then all of our hand, like we're all taught how to write in a very similar fashion, but the way that we actually write out the letters or words are very different to how other people's handwriting is. I think that's pretty good. All right. Also, I already talked about fingerprints. So, Miriam goes on to tell her that she has the sight along with second sight. Now, I had no idea that a shaman could have second sight because we've never encountered anyone that had this ability, but having the second sight means that you can get flashes of the future. And what Miriam tells Melody is that something that she wasn't sure of before, it's something that's going to happen. And this is just like, Melody's just like, oh, well, this changes a lot. But they don't go on to talk about what it is. It's finally the day for them to leave. And to say the tension is thick is a very big fucking understatement. Hunter is staying with his kids and his brothers and Miriam, while the rest of them are leaving, and Mel and Raz haven't said anything to Hunter. Nothing. And so they have, but they do have this very long hugging and kissing goodbye, and then they walk on to the RV. And once they leave, it's actually a pretty boring drive until Melody starts to get a headache. And this is not exactly a headache per se, but what Mel is actually experiencing is hearing hundreds of shifters crying out for help. Now, Arjun is the only one who can help her through this. And he realizes that the best way to get her through this is to shift into his tiger and start purring very loudly. And that actually drowns out the voices in her head. So she ends up passing out from this, and she wakes up a couple hours later, and she's telling the guys all about what she heard and saw, and she's just like, we have to do something. Well, they can't do anything until after their show. So they continue on. They continue on to the hotel, and Mel is actually kind of excited when they get to the hotel because they're right next to the beach. Melody has never seen the beach before. I want to say the first time, well, she's never seen the ocean either. So I want to say the first time I saw the ocean, I'm pretty sure I was 10 the first time I saw the ocean. Me and my family went to Disney, and on our way, we drove down, which is like a 22-hour drive from where I live in Ohio. And oh god, it was such a long drive. And every single morning, my sister was so excited that she threw up before we even left the hotel. But we were always in the car. We hadn't left the hotel. My sister would get so excited that we are going to Disney that she would throw up. But the day before we got to the hotel that we were staying in Orlando, we stopped at Daytona, and I swam in the ocean for the first time. We did body surfing there because the waves were fucking huge. And then I think the next time I swam in the ocean, I was 17. We went on vacation to North Carolina. We were in the Outer Banks, and I actually tried surfing there. There were very small waves, so I think I stood up for, I think, a good, I'm going to give myself a top of 3 seconds before I fell, and it was fun. And then I want to say the last time I actually swam in the ocean, not the last time I saw the ocean, but the last time I swam in the ocean, I think I was 28. And I will say this. I am terrified of swimming in the ocean. Here's the thing. I don't like swimming in any body of water that has any sort of life in it. So I don't like swimming in ponds and lakes and rivers and oceans because I'm always afraid something's going to grab me. My father traumatized me as a kid with Jaws and Anaconda and all that shit where things grab. Fuck, even fucking Oh God. Star Wars: A New Hope. That shit scared the shit out of me. They're in the trash compactor and something grabs them from the water thingy and pulls them under. I'm sorry, but anything can eat you. I watch river monsters, for God's sake. There are things in there that can eat people. Oh, shit. But no, how I got into the ocean that last time is there was a tiki bar not far from where we were, so my siblings got me drunk and then I went to the ocean. Oh. So I did see the ocean when I was in California, but it was so cold. And I'm just like, no. Because here's the thing. I always thought, no matter where you are in California, it's going to be hot. It's going to be nice. San Francisco wasn't all that warm. I think the highest it got was maybe 65 degrees. And it's really windy. And my brother is the only one that touched the water in the ocean. I think all he said was, fuck no. Because it was so cold and there's just people swimming and kite surfing and no, windsurfing, sorry, not kite surfing, windsurfing. I had to think about that for a minute. We don't really see that on I live about a like a 20 to 30 minute drive away from Lake Erie, and so you don't really see too many people windsurfing on Lake Erie, but the water gets choppy, but we don't really get waves. Anyway, okay, back to the story. Sidetracking a lot on this one. Woo! So they get into the hotel and they're just like, hey, we're sorry, but the books that you are, not the books, wow. The rooms that you had booked out were actually given to someone else, but we upgraded you to a suite. Now, this is something. So, Melody lets slip that she's never been to a hotel before. So she's never stayed in a regular hotel room. She's also never been to a suite. I've never been to a suite either. The ones that I see on TV look nice, but I don't know what a regular suite in a hotel looks like. Huh. And how do you? So once I get up there, Melody's just looks at Connor and goes, "Hey, can we talk real quick?" So they go into another room and she's just like, I don't want you to freak out. I don't want you to, I know this wasn't in your plan at all, but there is a, and she also goes, don't be mad at me. And he's just like, I'm not going to be mad at you. Cause I had a conversation about this beforehand and that's why she said, don't be mad at me. But she tells him like, hey, there is a possibility that I'm pregnant. One of the times that we were together with Raz and Hunter, we forgot a condom. And he's just like, at first he says nothing. And then Connor's so excited. He goes, really? There's like a big possibility for this. And she goes, I know it wasn't your plans. And he goes, I love you. I'm going to love any kid that we have together. And he goes, the reason I said it before was because I knew having kids with Vicky would have been a horrible experience because she is just very self-centered. So we are going to go back to Georgia, and Hunter's there. He's missing everyone. And the kids are asking when they're going to go home. He goes, "Well, what do you mean home?" He goes, and the kids are just like, "Back home with Mel and the guys." And when Hunter's just like, "Well, we can go back tomorrow, but none of them are going to be there." And it's Rena that says, "Are they mad at us? Did we do something to make them mad? Do they not want us anymore?" And Hunter's just like, no, it's nothing like that. It's they're doing a job right now, and has to like explain to him that that no one's leaving each other. It's just right now they have to do a job. So later on that night, he can't sleep, and he goes out to another room and he sees Gabe, and you start to see Gabe basically singing a different tune about humans now. And we know that it's Miriam that is changing this about him. And Hunter and him, they talk, and Hunter's just like, I should have gone with him. And he's just like, yeah, you should have. And he goes, "Well, if you're gonna go, just know this one thing. This is something that Miriam had told us." And he goes, "What's that?" He goes, "Not all shamans can be trusted." Now that is something that you're just like, what? Like, from what we've learned so far, all shamans are supposed to be helping shifters. So, kind of, what does it mean you can't trust all shamans? Or that not all shamans can be trusted? Yeah, wording on that is very difficult, because if you say it one way, it means the entire group in general. And then if you say it a different way, it's just some of them. So, it's time for the show. And they're told that as long as there's no negative feedback from the audience, they will also be given a long-term contract. They also are told that a lot of people from Crying Falls in Mississippi, the carnival that they met Raz at, are in the audience. Now, they talk about how long it would take for the contract to be negotiated and approved and all the planning, and when would they go back on stage? And they're told it'd be months, couple months before they were to go on stage again. They're just like, all right. So it's right before they go on stage that she tells Arjun and Rasmin that there's a possibility that she's pregnant. And they need to consider that before, or put that into consideration before they sign anything. And the show goes on without any issues, and they're actually giving a standing ovation afterwards. Last page of notes. So right as they get off stage and they're doing this kind of meet and greet thing, Mel has a vision to where they're starting to hurt children if the parents don't do what they're told. And she is much more adamant about helping them now. And we learn that, the place that they're holding all these shifters at, it's the same place that Arjun and Rasmin would have been held at, and where they would have been. And it's kind of like a so it's basically where Raz was forced to learn how to swallow swords. So not really a place they want to go back to. But they're all trying to figure out what to do, and they're just like, you know what, let's take a minute. You know, right now we're on a vacation, so we're going to spend the rest of the day at the beach, and then afterwards we'll come up with a game plan, because they just want a little time to unwind from their performance and just take a breather before shit hits the fan. And Mel actually learns something when she's there. So she meets a young dolphin shifter that has been told by her pod to stay away from humans after being told that another shaman had caught a pod with nets. Now she goes on to say that this shaman was a man and had told her that he has a school for shifter children, but the parents don't want their children to go because they are human, and also the parents are very proud. I mean, if I was a shifter, I would be too, but I know they don't mean the pride in that way. She goes on to say that she can't remember his name, but he told her how he would train other shamans to control their abilities. Now, for some of you, a light bulb is going off. Oh, I never looked up this guy's name either. Damn it. There's two names I was supposed to look up, and I never looked up the second name. All right. I'm going to guess on this one once we get there. Okay. Anyway. And this is huge. So once they're back at the hotel, they're all brainstorming about what to do. And Connor has an idea that is not 100% safe for Melody, but it would help them out greatly or immensely. And this is for her to focus and go from shifter to shifter to see the building. And soon she's able to get inside the facility. And what she sees is something out of a fucking horror movie. There's cages everywhere, but most of them are empty, which not really a good sign either. She can't see a single window until she goes through the eyes of one shifter. And she notices that he's on a cart and he is mostly paralyzed. That's the word. Frozen is the only word that came to my mind, and then paralyzed finally came. So Mel is able to get inside his head and he starts freaking out. And we learn that his name is Julian. And she goes, listen, I'm a shaman. I want to help get you out of there. I just need more information. Are you able to do this? And he goes, I'll help you any way that I can. And he tells her how he was captured, what the man looked like, how they walked to where they were holding him. But soon he starts freaking out more, which and makes her freak out. And then she is losing her concentration. So she's getting all these voices screaming at her all at once. And she's able to get back to herself afterwards. She's just so tired from this. And this is something that Arjun was really opposed to do this, because there was a great possibility that she could have lost herself in this. And it takes her a little while to recover, but once she wakes up, she thinks that she's dreaming because she sees Hunter. And he goes on to tell her, "No, this is real. I'm actually here." And it's after a reunion between her, Hunter, and Raz that Raz leaves with Arjun. And they end up going to the bar where Julian was taken, and they actually see someone else being taken, and they go to follow, but they ended up losing them after a little while. And this is when RJ realizes that there's an illusion hiding the building, and everything snaps into place, and he knows who exactly is behind this. Now, the name of this character is spelled Lhozen. Now, I am going to pronounce this like the L is silent, like in Nash. So I'm going to go with his name being Hozen. Could be completely wrong on that. I would love to be told if I'm completely wrong on that, or if I somehow got it right, which if I did, yay for me. If I didn't, oh shit. But this man is Arjun's stepfather. Dun dun dun. End of book. That is where we stop. The new and the next book is going to give us all the other juicy details about this. Oh my God. Oh. I have to say this book was more, especially the last, I would say the last couple of chapters were the most nail-biting chapters of them all, especially when you learn who is the evil mastermind? Because you start to get the picture of possibly who this is, especially when Melody was talking to the dolphin shifter. But I mean, and the thing is, to see how powerful Hozen is to basically make it look like an entire building is not fucking there with an illusion. Holy shit. Dude's powerful. Dude is motherfucking powerful. And I don't know how I feel about that. I know these are fictional characters, but shit, this guy scares me. Because who knows what else he can do. Through this entire last half of the book, we are seeing Melanie, no, Melody and Arjun just getting closer to one another to kind of react to that attraction. Now, Arjun had said in the past that no matter what, oh God, how did he phrase it in a way to say, like, even if he wanted to act on his attraction to her, he couldn't. And I can't remember exactly how he said it. And it was something to do with his mother's side of the family, because he talked about how he was in an arranged marriage, but that basically all went to shit. Yeah. Shit. And then, there's the what I do love is how Hunter decided, I love my family, but I need Melody and I need Rasmin. And I think he realized, what I might think is the best for us isn't what my kids think is the best for us. And also what I think might be for The Best of Us is severely hurting me. And I think a lot of people have made decisions like that to where, you know, they do what's best for them and not what they want to actually do. And yeah. And how much fucking money are they gonna make? Jesus. They probably are gonna make more than I do in a year. Which is really sad. Which makes me really want to get a different job, but unfortunately, the answer to that is no. I actually like my job. Some days. Yeah. So that's all I got for you this week. We've got one more book for the series to do. As I said, I'm not doing the seventh book in the series, because that is a extended epilogue. So if you guys want to read that, you guys can. I'm just not going to cover it. And then I also have an announcement to make, at that as well. So then, that will be that. So, if you guys like the podcast and everything, please rate, subscribe, and review. Every little bit helps. Also, if you guys want to follow me on social media, you guys can do that at Not Your Normal Books on Instagram. If you guys want to email me any book suggestions or any authors you guys want me to look at or anything like that, you can email that to notyournormalbooks@gmail.com. So I'll see you guys all next week.